Okay, we're beginning here 4 lines down on the top of Yud Bet Amud Aleph. Amar Rav Nachman Amar Rav, Ra'achad Sheshachat Imra'o Mitichila Vatzof. A person sees someone doing Shechita, if he observed it from beginning to end, Mutar Lechol Mishchitato, then you can eat from the Shechita. Vim Lav, if you didn't observe it through the whole process, Asur Lechol Mishchitato, then you can't eat from his Shechita. Hey Chidami, what exactly is the scenario here? Idi Adi De Gamir, if we know that he learned Hilchot Shechita, Lamali Ra'ah, why do you have to see him? Why do you have to observe him? Idiado Dolo Gamir, on the other hand, if it's a case where he doesn't know the Hilchot Shechita, Pshita, it's very straightforward. And over here, Rashi says Pshita, that Dura'ah Mutar, if you did observe him, if you did see it, then it would have been fine, because then you see there was no Shia, there was no Drisa. Lo Ra'ah Asur, if you didn't see him, then it clearly is Asur, because Shema Shaha Odaras. That's the way Rashi learns it. The Tosafot back on Gimel Amud Bet did not like Rashi's interpretation over here. And back there on Gimel Amud Bet, Tosafot says Pshita, that it doesn't work. That it's Pshita, that if they didn't learn, Tosafot says that's an automatic disqualification. If you didn't learn Hilchot Shechita, even if you oversee that person, there's nothing to do. There is no Kosher Shechita when the person doesn't know the Halachot of Shechita. That's the way the Ba'i Tosafot read the Pshita over here, in order to reconcile with the Gemara back on Daf Gimel Amud Bet, where it seems to indicate that if you don't, even if you're standing over them, if they don't know what they learned, then there's no help in standing over them. As opposed to here, where it sounds more like Rashi, that is, if you saw them, it would have helped. If you didn't see them, it wouldn't help. So Tosafot reconciles by saying the Pshita over here means Pshita, that it doesn't work at all. Rashi learns the way he does, and then others answer on behalf of Rashi, including Rabbi Kiv Eger, that maybe there's a difference here versus there. Which is over here, you know the person didn't learn. Since you know they didn't learn, you're much more attentive. You're looking carefully to make sure they do it correctly. And in that observation, that's enough to make it kasher. Versus the case back on Gimel Amud Bet, where Omed Al Gabav, somebody's just standing there, and they're watching the Shechita, but they don't know if he knows Hilchot Shechita or not. They're not paying close attention to it. They're just seeing that he did the Shechita. So he says maybe that's a distinction that in that case, it won't help because he didn't learn, but over here it would help because he didn't learn, but we know that fact that he didn't learn, and that helps us in terms of the observation. Or the difference between Omed Al Gabav versus over here, where it is Mitchila Vatsof, also is indicative of a different qualitative watching. That over there, it's just Omed Al Gabav, it's just standing there. Over here is Mitchila Vatsof, he's involved, he's paying careful attention to that which is happening. And so too, that also might be a distinction over here as to why over here the Ra'ah would work even though he hadn't learned. Ve'ela, so what is the case here? Lo yodo gamir lo gamir. We don't know if he learned or he didn't learn. We don't know if he knows Hilchot Shechita. So leima, then why don't we invoke the principle that we've seen before, Rov Mitzuyim Etzo Shechita Mumchim, hey? Majority of people engaged in Shechita are experts. Milo Tanyo, don't we have a Braita? Harei Shematza, Tana Golet Shechuta Bashuk. If a person finds a chicken that is shechted in the shuk, Osho Amar Lishlucho, say Shachot, and he says to his shliach, go out and shech, Balach Umatza Shachot, and then he goes out and finds that it is Shachot, Chezkato Shachot. Then the Chazaka is that that is a good Shechita. Alma, from this you would conclude, Amrinan Rov Mitzuyim Etzo Shechita Mumchimen. We assume that the majority of individuals who engage in Shechita are Mumchim, and for that reason, we assume that the Shechita here that you find is good. The way the Bali Tosafot read the Braita is that there are 2 stages to the Braita. The first stage of the Braita is the Baalim go out and they find an animal shechted in the shuk. So even though they don't know the Baalim of the item, we assume that the owners of this item shechted it, and therefore it's a kosher shechita, because Rov Mitzuyim Etzo Shechita Mumchim Hem. Then in the second scenario, he says to his shliach, can you go out and do the shechita for me? And then, valachu matzah is not about the balabait, but the shliach himself. The shliach himself goes out and finds the animal already shechut. So here we know for sure it's not the owners that shechted it, because the owner sent the shliach to do it. Nevertheless, we still say, chezkato shechut. And that's the chiddush according to the Ba'i Tosafot. There's 2 stages. There's a first stage where you find it, and we assume it's the owners that did it, and therefore we say, rov mitzuyim etzo shechita mumchim hein. In the second scenario, we know whoever shechted it didn't have permission to shechted. Because the balabayit sent the shliach to do it, and the shliach finds it already shechut, which means somebody else without permission had done the shechita. Nevertheless, we say chezkato shechut because of the fact that rov mitzuyim etzo shechita mumchim hein. That's the way the Ba'i Tosafot learn it. The Rabbeinu Gershom, and the simpler way to read it is the person who found it was the balabayit. So the first scenario would be that he finds a tanagolet shechuta in the shuk, and then his second scenario is he sends out a shliach. and he doesn't know if the shliach did it shlichut or not, and then he finds it shachut. So he can assume that it was the shliach that did it. But in that scenario, the second case isn't as big a chiddush as the first case, because the first case, he finds he has no idea who shechted it. In the second case, he's making an assumption that it was the shliach that did it, and did it with their permission, and therefore that would be less of a chiddush. And then the chiddush would be the fact that even though you could be mevarer, you could check out who the shliach was that you sent and whether he did it or not, we don't obligate you to do that because we assume that whatever shchita took place was done by a mumche, and you can rely on that fact that the shchita was done properly if you found it shachut. And the idea of finding it shachut means that you see that the two simanim are cut, like normal shchita would take place. We assume the fact that the simanim are cut in the way of shchita, that whoever engaged in that was a mumche or understood what they were supposed to be doing. And so the question is, hachanami, why don't we say the same thing over here by the case of Amar Rav Nachman Amar Rav, that ra achat sheshachat, im ra'o mitchila batzof, it's mutar. If not, it's not mutar. And we said it's a case where we don't know if the person learned hilchot shechita. Why don't we just assume the same thing here? Lema rov mitzum etzo shechita mumchime. And if that's the case, why don't we rely on that shechita, even if you didn't see him from beginning to end? Mara says, olam diyada delo gomir. It's a situation in which we know for certain he didn't learn hilchot shechita. Ukegon de shachat kaman chad siman shapir. But it's a case where he shechted one siman perfectly fine in front of us. Ma'u detema, I would have thought me the high shapir, hachnami shapir. Since we already have evidence of doing the first siman properly, that we can rely on that as a chazaka that he'll do the second siman properly. Kamash malan, that we do not say that. Haidrume itramile, we assume that he was just beginner's luck. He got the first siman and it worked well. Idach shemesh shaha shemedaras. On the other hand, the other siman, maybe he had shiha, maybe he did risa. He doesn't know hilchot shechita, so you can't just rely on him. You need to see him from beginning to end to ensure the fact that it actually works and that you're able to guarantee the fact that this is a good shechita. Had it been just one siman, that's not enough evidence of the fact that the second siman was done properly. Now again, shiha and risa are things that you can't check after the fact. And so that's something you'll never know, because the person doesn't know hilchot shechita. And again, even if you teach him after the fact, we've spoken about before, that a person doesn't pay attention to these matters when they don't know what the matter is that is important. And so even if you teach him afterwards and he says retroactively, yes, I didn't do that, it's not necessarily reliable because he wasn't focused on that detail when he was doing the shechita because he didn't have knowledge of it. So, bai minei Rav Dimi bar Yosef mi Rav Nachman. Homer l'shlucho, say v'shachut. Person says to his shliach, go out and shecht for me. Balach u'matza shachut. And then he goes out and finds that it was shachut. Mao, what's the din? Amalo chazkato shachut. We assume that the chazaka is that the shechita was done. Omer l'shlucho, tse v'tarom. Person says, go out and take off trumot and masrot for me. Valachu matzat tarum. And he goes out and he finds that it is separated out, whether that means he sees the section that would be the amount of truma that was there, or somebody left him a note that it was done. Mai, what's the din? Amale, ein chazkato tarum. We don't assume that truma was taken off of it. It says, manav shach. Please help me understand the two halachot here. If the assumption is, or the chazaka is, that a proxy, a messenger, does his bidding, and he carries out whatever he was instructed to do, then afilu truma nami. Then the truma should be a good truma as well. If we assume that shlichim are not relied upon to do their shlichut, meaning that even if you ask them to do something, we don't assume that they're going to do it. We don't assume just because they volunteered for this, or they agreed to do it, that they're actually going to carry it out, then afila shchita nami lo. Then why do we consider the shchita to be okay? Amarle, so Rav Nachman says back to Rav Dimi bar Yosef, b'chitecho ala kura de milcha. Kura is a very large amount of salt. And Rashi says over here, it means after you've measured out a kor worth of salt, I'll tell you the answer. And Rashi says, b'dichuto, he was joking with him. It was a little bit of levity. Saying to him, once you do something like that, I'll tell you the answer. Others take it more seriously and say that l'chitecho l'akur de milcha means take some time to investigate it. Take them some time to look into it, and then you'll come to the right conclusion. You'll come to the right understanding. Or l'chitecho l'akur de milcha means if you eat a bunch of salt, which is something that's sharp, meaning that if you sharpen your focus over here, you'll be able to understand this, which is l'olam ein chazaka shliach oseh shlichuto. We don't necessarily rely on a proxy to do that which they volunteered to do or that which they agreed to do. And so therefore, we would have assumed in both cases that there's a problem, both by the shchita and by the truma, there's a problem. So then why by shchita do you say the shchitato is kshera? Ushchita inami dilma inish achrina, shama va'azov shachat. if you think that the problem by Shechita is that the Shliach didn't do it, but maybe somebody else overheard him and went and did it on his behalf, Rov Mitzumetzo Shechita Mumchime. Majority of people who engage in Shechita are Mumchim, and so if you find that Shechted, even if it's not the Shliach, you can assume whoever engaged in this Shechita, whoever did this, knew what they were doing, and therefore you have a Kosha Shechita. On the other hand, by Truma, Dilma Inish Achrina Shama V'Azal Tarom, so maybe somebody else overheard the conversation when it did the Hafrasha Truma to Masrot, Havlei Toreim Shalomidat. That's someone who's taking off Truma without permission of the Balabait. But Toreim Shalomidat ain't Truma to Truma. If a person takes off Truma to Masrot on behalf of the Balabait without his permission, that doesn't work because we require that Gamatem. Your Shlichim have to be just like you, and just like you, it has to be done Ledat. So too, the Shliach has to do it Ledat, which means that they have to be aware of what they're doing, but also means that they have to have permission from the Balabait in order to engage in this removal of the Trumot and Ma'asrot, and if you don't have permission, then it doesn't work. It says the difference is not about the Shliach. The Shliach isn't believed no matter what. We don't assume that the Shliach did it. The major difference between them is what happens if it wasn't the Shliach who engaged in this activity. In front of us, we have Truma that's taken off. In front of us, we have something that is Shechut. So even if we assume that it wasn't the Shliach who did it, in the case of Shechita, that's fine, because then you have Rov Mitzumetzo Shechita or Mum Chimeim, we can assume it's a good Shechita. By Truma, it's no good, because by Truma, we assume that someone else engaged in taking off the Trumot de Masrot. That's problematic, because it did not have permission of the Balabait to do it, and therefore it's not effective in taking it off without permission of the Balabait. So Gemara says, Lema rov mitzuyim etzo shkita mumchim hein tanaehi. Let us assume that this question about whether we invoke the principle of rov mitzuyim etzo shkita are considered to be mumchimim, let us say that that is a machloket tanaim. Titania. Haresha avdulo gidiav v'tano golav. Person lost his kids, he lost his chickens, Balach umatzan shchutim, and he bumps into them, all of a sudden he finds them, but they're all shechted. Rabbi Yehuda Oser, Rabbi Yehuda says you can't rely on that. Rabbi Chanina Benosh, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Matir. He says that there's no problem with that, meaning that they assume that it is a good shechita. Now Tosafot over here points out that this is not only if they were lost, this is even if they were stolen. And he says, Huadin b'nignevu, t'mishum d'chashida gneva lo chashida nevela. Just because someone is not reliable with regards to stealing or theft, in that they will engage in that misdemeanor, nevertheless, they will not cause nevelot, they will not get improper shechita. And so that we're willing to differentiate between gneva, where a person could be suspect, versus the issue of shechita, where they would believed. So it's not only if you lost them, it's even if they were stolen, and then you find them shechutim, that Rabbi Chanina, Benosh, Rabbi Yossi Aglili would say that you could rely on that shechita. Although, based on Rav Nachman's statement that we saw before, it seems that he doesn't necessarily agree with that, because he says it in a case of a shliach, or somebody overhearing you giving those instructions that goes ahead and does the shechita, implying that had it been someone who didn't know about your will or your desire for it to be shechted, then maybe that would not be good enough, or maybe that would not work in that case. Elam Kane, you say that Rav Nachman was just speaking about the normal situation or scenario where you'd expect that to happen, because otherwise people don't willy-nilly go ahead and shecht animals for other people, or thinking that other people would benefit from that. Maybe that's the explanation of Nachman. Otherwise, Rav Nachman seems to be a little bit against what the Balei Tosafot are saying over here. So now, Gemara says, I'm a Rabbi. Rabbi says about these opinions in the Braita, Nirin Devarim Shel Rabbi Yehuda Shematzan Bashpa. I think that Rabbi Yehuda's position makes sense if you find them in the garbage dump. Udivei Rabbi Chanina Benosh Rabbi Yossi Aglili Shematzan Babayit. If you find them in the house, then Rabbi Chanina Benosh Rabbi Yossi Aglili's position makes sense. If you find them in the garbage, it makes sense to say that it's not a kosher shechita. It was probably a nevela. You find him in the house, makes sense to say it's probably a kosher shechita. My love, the hakamiflege. This is the machloki between them. Masavar amrin and rov mitzuyim etzo shechita mumchim hein. Masavar lo amrin and rov mitzuyim etzo shechita mumchim hein. The difference in their opinion is whether you believe that when you find something shechut, can you rely on it? Rabbi Yehuda says no, because he believes that we don't say, or we don't invoke this principle of rov mitzuyim etzo shechita mumchim hein. On the other hand, Rabbi Chanina, Benosh and Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, I think that rov mitzuyim etzo shechita are mumchim hein, and therefore you find something shechut, you can rely on the fact that it was shechut. And the Gemara in Bava Metzia qualifies this and says that it's a scenario or a situation where it's rov Yisrael in the area, or even it's rov goyim, the rov of the tabachim, the rov of the shochtim here are Yisraelim, and that's why you can rely on the rov. As far as basar shenitalei mina ayin, either the animal has a siman in it, and therefore that indicates that it was kasher. There's something there that indicates that it's not a problem basar and shenita lehem in a ayin, because he knows or he recognizes the animal, or the actual shechita itself. And the shechita, the simanim, in of itself is a siman, obviates the problem of basar shenita lehem in a ayin, because the simanei shechita themselves act as a siman to prevent the problem of basar shenita lehem in a ayin. Gemar says, Amar Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak, lo. Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak says he doesn't think that's the right explanation. Everybody agrees to this principle that the majority of people engaged in shechita are considered to be experts. If you find the animal shechut in the house, nobody disagrees deshari that it is mutar. That means both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Chanina in that case would say it's fine. If you find it out in the garbage dump by the marketplace, everybody there will agree that it's problematic because they assume that it's a nevelo. When you throw into the garbage dump by the shuk, that's where they throw animals that can't be used or that are nevelot. Question is, the garbage dump near the house, which is a smaller dump, it's a more private dump, it's not your public marketplace dump, that's where they argue. People will put their animal, when it's a nevela, in their private garbage dump. And Rabbi Chanina believes in Adam Asui Latil Nevelato Bashpasha Babayit. People don't put their Nevela in a location where when it starts to rot and smell, it's going to become terrible and unpleasant. And so therefore they would never put the carcass after it was shechted and they find it in Nevela by their house. They take it over to the marketplace dump or to the public dump because it's going to rot and it's going to smell and they don't want that proximate to their house. So if you find it in the garbage dump, you can still assume that it's a good shechita and it's not a Nevela. Because otherwise people wouldn't put it in the garbage dump near their house. And so the question is, when you find something in the Ashbash Bavayit, do we assume that that was intentionally placed there and it's a nevela? Or do we assume that something happened, it got lost, or they put it there in order to allow it to drain out or to have whatever mess that's going to be made put there? And therefore it's not considered a nevela, and we don't see it as being placed there with intent, indicating that it is a nevela. And Tosfot over here notes that their machloket is not just about an ashpasha babayit, but also if he found him in the shuk, regularly in the shuk, not in the garbage of the shuk, but just right in the shuk, the same machloket they have by ashpasha babayit would apply over there. So Amar Mar, so now the problem with this explanation of the Braita is really Rabbi's statement at the end of the Braita, which is, Amar Rabbi, nirin divrei Rabbi Yehuda shematzan bashpa, my ashpa. According to this explanation, then what is the ashpa that Rabbi is saying that I think that Rabbi Yehuda's position makes more sense when we see it in a dump? Ilem ashpa shebashuk, if it is the garbage dump in the marketplace, ha'amar tekuliyama lo plige. Asur. You said everybody agrees that it's asur. So what does it mean that I think Rabbi Yehuda is right? Even Rabbi Chanina agrees. Elalab shita dib ashpa shebabayit. Must be we're speaking about a private dump. So then, if that's the case, then their machloket is about ashpa shebabayit. And over there, Rabbi is saying that about an ashpa babayit, I think Rabbi Yehuda is right and it should be asur. Aim a seifa. Then what are you going to do with the latter half of Rabbi's statement? B'divi Rabbi Chanina b'noch Rabbi Yossi Aglili shematzan b'bayit. You find it in the house, I think Rabbi Chanina is right. B'bayit, what does it mean in the house? Ilem b'bayit mamash. If you think it means literally in the house, amar t'kuli amalo plige d'shari. Everybody agrees that's mutar. Abshita sheba ashpa sheba bayit must be a reference to the private dump by the house. And then you would conclude that he says, I think that Rabbi Chanina is right. But that means now, kasha d'rabi ad'rabi. The two statements of Rabbi are contradictory. One says that Ashpasha Babayit, I think that Rabbi Yehuda is correct. And then the second statement in the Seifa, he's saying that I think Rabbi Chanina is right with Ashpasha Babayit. That means he's saying that I think both of them are right by Ashpasha Babayit. Doesn't make any sense. Chachi Kamar. So now you have to read Rabbi's statement differently. Until now we're reading Rabbi's statement as meaning that Venirin, there's a machloket here, and I favor one of the two positions in this situation, which means that he can't be speaking in a case where everybody agrees. It has to be in a case where they have a disagreement. And he's saying, I favor one of the two opinions in that case. Well, we showed, if we believe, like the explanation of Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, that they agree in the two extreme cases, then it's hard to understand where Rabbi made his statement. And it would turn out that he made a statement both times in the same issue of Machloket, which is Ashpasha Babayit, and then be contradictory. They say over here, read it differently. Chikamar nir in divrei Rabbi Yehuda le Rabbi Chanina benosh Rabbi Yossi Aglili bashpasha bashuk. Nirin doesn't mean Rabbi's personal position over here. It means that he is trying to explain Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Chanina's positions. And he's saying that Rabbi Chanina agrees with Rabbi Yehuda's position when it comes to an ashpa shebashuk, she'af Rabbi Chanina b'nosh Rabbi Yosi Aglil, lo nechlak alav elabah shebashabayit, because he only argues in a case of ashpa shebabayit. Aval bashpa b'shuk, modile. But by ashpa shuk, he agrees to him, and then nirin the other way. When he says that, babayit, nirin, divrei Rabbi Chanina b'nosh Rabbi Yosi Aglil, he doesn't mean, I think that his position makes sense. He's saying that Rabbi Yehuda agrees to Rabbi Chanina's position in that case, and when you find it in the bayit, it's mutar. So the nirin is not a hachra by Rabbi between the two opinions, but rather it's explaining the two opinions that they agree in the extreme cases to each other's position. And nirin means the dissenting opinion agrees in this case. And then by that way, he says that kulei ama think that a dashpas b'shuk is asur. Kulei ama that you find in the bayit is mutar. The question is ashpas b'bayit, and that's where their machloket is. Right, so now the Gemara brings the case of chutz micher shoteve katan. Exception to the rule is a cher shoteve katan, shema yikalkulu et shchitatam, because maybe they will ruin the shchita. So the Gemara makes a deal out of this, which we noted earlier in the Gemara, shema kilkulu loktani, doesn't say maybe they did make a mistake, a shema yikalkulu, but maybe they will be mikalkel. Amarova zotomerit. The deal you would make out of this is ein mosrim lahen chulin lechatchila. Lechatchila, you can't hand them anything, which means that we assume if they engage in this activity that they are mu'adim lekalkel, that they are somebody who always ruins it. That's why we don't want to hand it to them, because we can assume if they get a hold of it, they're going to do something wrong. And so that's what Rav is pointing out of this deal, which is that when the Mishnah says shema not kilkulu, maybe they did make a mistake. We're saying shema yikalkulu, because maybe they're going to ruin it, because when they get engaged with it, they will ruin it. So it's not a statement about the uncertainty of the situation, which is shema kilkulu, because maybe they did something wrong, but rather shema yikalkulu. Maybe in the future, maybe it's a statement about handing them something, that we worry about handing them something because of the likelihood that they're going to cause a problem. So it's not an ex post facto where we're saying, oh, they maybe they did something wrong. We're saying even a priori, we don't want to hand them anything because they are going to ruin it. They're going to make it a mess. And so therefore we have high expectations from them that they will ruin it. And so that means that you can't lechatchila hand it to a chereshot v'katan, because we don't even really consider it as a fake. We almost consider it a vadai that they're going to ruin the situation. V'kulan sheshachtu v'acherim ro'im otam shchitatan k'sheira. On the other hand, if somebody is overseeing them, then the shchita is k'sheira. We discussed this in the earlier Dapim, but Rashi makes a note of it here as well, which was that the Gemara before said, well, if it's a reference to Cheresh Shoteve Katan beforehand, it shouldn't have said V'kulan Sheshachtu. It should just say V'im Shachatu. If they did Shecht and someone was standing over them or watching them, that would have been sufficient. The fact that it doesn't shows you it must be speaking about something else besides the case of Cheresh Shoteve Katan. So Rashi points out over here what Tosafot mentioned earlier, which is that that's not an exclusive statement. It's not saying that when you say v'kulan sheshachtu, it means must be something besides cher shvoteh v'katan. And cher shvoteh v'katan, omer al gavav, doesn't work at all. That's not true. As Rashi says over here, when it says im shachatu, that would mean that exclusively cher shvoteh v'katan, if someone's omer al gavahen, that would have taken care of it. The fact that it says v'kulan shachatu means that there must be something beyond that, more than just cher shvoteh v'katan, where omer al gavahen has impact. And that's what the different Amoraim we saw back on Daf Gimel discussed, the different explanations for the Mishnah as to when you had somebody overseeing it, that it was considered to be an efficacious shchita. But it doesn't exclude the fact that standing over Cher Shoteve Katan works. So Bidiavad, if somebody was overseeing the Cher Shoteve Katan, we assume that that's a good shchita if the individual observing them says that they did it properly. But that's only in terms of bidiavad. The chatchila, we wouldn't let them do that, as we saw before, because they're mu'adim, the kelkel. That's Rashi's explanation, although the Rabbeinu Tam back on Bet Amud Aleph, in the Balei Tosafot over there, says that the reason we don't hand it over to Cher Shoteh V'Katan is speaking at a situation where there's nobody standing over them. Ein omer al gabehem, and still the chatchila, we don't hand it to them. That should be obvious. But the chiddush is that we don't even hand it over them in order to feed it to the dogs or to make it into a nevela, because we're afraid that they themselves might come to eat it, or others might see it and think that they can eat from it. And so because of the problems that could arise, we don't hand them an animal, even in a case where you don't care that it becomes a nevela, we still don't hand animals lechatchila to a cheresh shoteh v'katan. So he sees this as a broader imperative, not to hand them any animals at all, lechatchila, versus Rashi just sees it as a problem in the world of shchita. Mantana dolo beinin kavana l'shchita. Which Tana believes over here that you don't need intent? You don't need someone to do shchita for the shame shchita. The assumption being that a chershoteh v'katan does not have the capacity to do it b'kavana, and that's even if omed al gabav. That's even if you have somebody watching them, guiding them, it still doesn't work in terms of kavana. It is ksheira, but it doesn't work in terms of kavana. So b'diavad, if somebody was overseeing the chershoteh v'katan, we assume that that's a good shchita if the individual observing them says that they did it properly. But that's only in terms of b'diavad. The chatchila, we wouldn't let them do that, as we saw before, because they're muadim, the kelkel. And the second thing to keep in mind is that if you think that omed al gavav works over here, that's only because you believe that you don't need kavana b'shchita, because they don't have the capacity to provide kavana over here. And the Baal Tosafot are bothered by this, because Tema, the mashma hocha, the chereshoteh v'katan, lav b'nei kavana ninhu, which is the obvious result of what you're reading in the Gemara, is that we assume that they don't have the capacity to create kavana. Afilu acherim omdim al gaban. Even if somebody else is standing over them and guiding them, that doesn't work. He says, I don't understand that if we go to the Gemara in Gitin, there's a case there that if a chereshoteh v'katan writes a get, then it needs to be done lishma. And if nobody is guiding them and nobody's overseeing them, then we assume that it's not done lishma. On the other hand, if someone's overseeing them and guiding them, we assume that that is lishma. So how come by the get, somebody standing over them can imbue the lishma aspect and can guide them to do a lishma? Yet over here by the shkita, we can't say that the person standing over them, mashkiach alehem, doesn't have the capacity to generate the kavana that's needed over here. What's the difference in the cases? The Tosfot gives one distinction up front. V'yesh lomar, b'gadomel omeid agabav, haynu shem lamdim otam, umazhirim otam lasot lishma. By the get, when we say somebody's standing over them, it's not simply that they're standing over them, it means that they're guiding them, they're directing them, they are instructing them in that case, and that's why the lishma works by the get. B'hacha, acherim ro'im otam. It doesn't say that they're omdim al gabehem, it says ro'im otam. People are observing them, they're not guiding them, they are not instructing them, they're simply observing what they did. In that case, they can't imbue the kavana into them because they're not actively involved. That's how Tosafot gives one distinction between them, which is that the case of get has much more involvement. The case over here is simply standing from afar and watching what's happening. Or you could see making the distinction between the fact that when there's a gadol omed al gabav, we assign the kavana of the gadol to the katan, versus the case where he's just ro'eh, where there's no kavana of the gadol. And in that situation, you can't assign it to the katan. But had it been that the gadol had kavana, that would be imbued into the action of the katan. Or you could argue that the katan defers to the kavana of the gadol. Therefore, if the gadol is omed al gabav, then whatever he's doing, the katan defers to that kavana of the gadol. And that's why it works over there. But the case where you just roe oto, you're just seeing him from afar, then he doesn't defer to the kavana of the gadol, because he doesn't see the gadol as being involved in the process of the shchita. And that's because the katan's just shechting for his ability to eat it. He doesn't have any kavana in the intent of what it's going to be used for or what the purpose is. Tosafot again then discusses why chalitza over there, it works in terms of beitin. And he says that chalitza bebeitin avik gadol omed al gabav shemazirin oto lasot lishma. So similarly, if you're engaged in activity in beitin, the same thing applies there as well, which is that you can imbue lishma because beitin is actively involved in what the individual is doing. And then, in the end, he says, then what's the distinction by shoteh, whereby chalitza, we don't say that beit din has the capacity to generate the proper intent, whereas by get, we say that standing over them, it does create the proper intent when there's a shoteh there. So why is there a difference in the din of a shoteh by get and chalitza? He says, by get, there's more evidence of the fact that he's doing it lishma. David lishma, kishmenichin lichtov shmo, bishma, b'shemiro, b'shemira, because he's filling in all this information about the individual, the woman, the man, their locations, all that information is indicative of the fact that he's doing it lishma, he's doing it for these particular individuals. Hilka chafilu pshoteh, mahani kishgadol omed al gabav. And therefore, even by shoteh, if you have somebody overseeing it, it is sufficient. By the case of chalitza, where it's in beitin, that's not enough to generate the kavanah, because all he's doing is the activities of chalitza. He's not doing something that indicates the lishma or the kavana aspect that you need in that scenario. Whereas by the get, there's much more evidence of the fact that he's doing it lishma. Right, so Amar Rava, Rabbi Natan he. So Rava says that it is Rabbi Natan who is the author of our Mishnah and of that position that you do not need kavana l'shchita. The Tani Oshaya Zeira. So the younger Oshaya, The min chavraya, Tosafot says min chavraya means from a location, a particular place. Rashi says the min chavraya means from the bnei yeshiva. Zarak sakin lenoatza bekoto. A person threw a knife to have it drive into the wall. I mean that he's throwing the knife so that it impales itself in the wall. Balcha v'shachta kedarka. On its way to the wall, it just happens to do a shchita. The knife cuts the neck of the animal on the way to the wall. And you have a good shchita here. Rabbi Natan makshir. Rabbi Natan says that's a good shchita. V'chachamim poslim. And the chachamim think it's pasul. Hu tanila. He brought this brayta, or he found this brayta. V'hu amarla. And he also gave the halachic psak, or the conclusion. Halacha ke Rabbi Natan. That the halacha is like Rabbi Natan. That you don't need kavana. V'habinan malich umevi. Don't you need a back and forth motion when it comes to shchita? If you're throwing it into the wall and it impales itself in the wall, then there's only one direction. It's a unidirectional movement of the knife. Where it says, shalchal va'a kedarka. It's a case where the knife hit the wall, bounced off, and cut the other direction as well. So you got both directions of motion. My Tosafot said you could have an easier answer over here, which is that if you have a knife that's long enough, and it's the two sizes of the neck of the animal, then you only need to go in one direction. Our problem with you not going back and forth is that we assume you did derisa, that you pushed on it and used pressure to get through, because if the knife is only the size of the neck of the behemah, one movement shouldn't get you all the way through. You would need multiple movements. And so therefore, we assume that you did drisa if you only went in one direction. And then if you went back and forth, we assume that you could make it through the animal without drisa. There is an exception to that rule, which is when the knife is as long as two necks of the animal. And that way, then a single movement of the knife could cut through both simanim without drisa because the knife is long enough. So that could have been the answer the Gemara gave over here, which would be a little more plausible. That's a case where the knife is much longer, and therefore you only needed a unidirectional movement in order to shuck the animal. That's what it says. The Gemara wanted to explain it even according to a situation or scenario where the knife is just a koldehu, that still you could have it work out. If it hits the wall and backs off the wall, then that's a good shchita, because you don't need kavana over here. And even though, as Tosafot points out, that the Gemara considers this kavanah lechituch when you throw it towards the wall, Tosafot over here says that's only for the sheet of the Rabbonon that they brought it over here to show that even in that scenario, the Rabbonon think it's pasul. But Rabbi Natan doesn't even require that you have kavanah lechituch, even in the case of mitasek, where you were just playing around with the knife and you didn't even intend to cut with the knife or to have it impale itself in the wall, that still would be a good shchita according to Rabbi Natan, because you don't need kavanah whatsoever, period. So therefore, as long as there's some koach adam there, that would be enough according to Rabbi Natan, because that is a requirement of shchita that be done by the power or the strength of an individual. So as long as it's just not happenstance, it just fell out of your hand passively, then that shchita would not be good. But if you actively drop the knife or throw the knife down, that would be enough according to Rabbi Natan to classify it as a good shchita. Although the Ramban disagrees with this conclusion of the Baal Tosafot, and he says, according to the Rabbanon, if you have kavanah lechituch, that would be sufficient, even though he agrees, basically, with his conclusion with regards to Rabbi Natan, that Rabbi Natan would allow even mitasek. But he sees the Rabbanon being more mekil than the Baal Tosafot, that if there was kavanah lechituch, it would be sufficient over here. You don't need what the Baal Tosafot claim, according to the Rabbanon, of chituch l'shem simanim. He doesn't require that higher standard of chituch simanim that the Baal Tosafot seem to indicate that the Rabbanon require in order for it to be a kosher shchita. So, Amar Rabbi Chir Ba'ava, by Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan had the following question. Katan, yesh lo machshava, o ein lo machshava? A katan, do we have the ability to attribute to him the proper thought or the proper kavanah in situations? The way Rashi says is the question here is, kagom shchitat kodoshim, debayi kavanah. We're speaking about here, shchitat kodoshim, where you need specific intent to do it the shame, the korban, to know that he's shechting kodoshim. Tosafot over here asks, didn't we say in the Gemara in the beginning of Zvachim that a stam kodoshim is lishma? You actually don't have to have any intent. You don't even have to have any machshava because Beit Din made it that this stam behema is done lishem kodoshim. So why do we need the katan to have any machshava over here? Even if the katan has no machshava, the stam behema is omed lishchitat kodoshim and you don't even have to have it intent. The Tosafot says that he differentiates between the stam case. A stam case is where a person shechs it and he just goes to the default. He doesn't have anything in mind, so we assume that his mindset is associated with the default scenario, and Chazal made it that the default scenario by Kodoshim is that you shechted him l'shem Kodoshim. On the other hand, he says that a katan actually might be a negative involvement here, or a negative contribution. That is, v'afilo u'kemer katan yudeani shem Kodoshim v'lishman ani mitkavein. And therefore, even if the Katan says, I know this is Kodeshim, and I'm doing it Lishma, maybe there it's still a problem. Im kavanato kavana. Dilma lamahanya im ein masav mochachim. Maybe if we don't have action to back up his words, then he's just saying things. Because if young children can say things, even though they don't understand the meaning of it, they don't understand what they're saying, and therefore it's no guarantee just because he articulates what he's doing, that he actually has kavana, or the proper intent with regards to this matter. And therefore he says, v'yesh lamar, destama de katan gara. The ein lo dat lahavin shem kodoshim, that a katan's worse than a case of stam because he doesn't have the capacity to understand that it's kodoshim. V'savar shem chulin, he thinks they're chulin. Vavilei mit asek upasul, and that means that he's mit asek, he's engaged with kodoshim without knowing that it's kodoshim, and that doesn't work by the case of kodoshim. So it is worse than a scenario of stam or default where we can assign that proper thought to a person who's a bardat. But here a katan who doesn't understand that it's kodoshim, he doesn't understand what he's doing. We're not going to assign his thought over there. Amalei Rabbi Ami, biti baile maseh. How do you know that his action is efficacious? Maishna maseh delo kami baile. Why is it that by a case of maseh, of action, he doesn't have a question? The tnan, yesh lehen maseh. Because we have a Mishnah that explicitly says that katanim's actions are considered to be efficacious, and therefore they have halachic impact. Makshava nami loti baile. Then makshava should also not be a question for him. That's not. Ain't they have makshava? Because in that same Mishnah, it tells us that they don't have makshava. That makshava doesn't work. That they don't have the capacity to have thoughts that are impactful in a halachic sense. That's not. Because we have a Mishnah in the Kelim. Halon, varimon, vahegos. These are all types of nuts that come off of the trees. Whether it's an acorn, it's a pomegranate, or it's a nut, and it goes, although Rashi over here says that the alon is a gallnut, not an acorn, whatever the nut is that's coming off the tree, shechakakum tinokot lamud behen afar, that the young children either punctured a hole in them, or dug them out, so that they became like a scoop, or they had an internal section to them, to use in their playing, to play in the sandbox, to measure out how much afar, to use it as a shovel of sort. Or they prepared them to be used on a scale, mitamim. In that case, they are mikabel tuma, mipnei sheyesh lahem ma'aseh, because the ktanim's actions are efficacious in this case, to by demonstrating what they're doing with it, they make it clear that they made it into a kli. And once it's a kli, it's mikabel tuma. So their actions are irrefutable. They did something that made it into a kli. If that's the case, it does have a din of ma'aseh. Ve'in lahem makshava. On the other hand, their makshava is not bearing over here, at least halachically. And Rashi gives the example, kugon, matzah leklipat egezoz kamo shaya. He found a shell of a nut like it was. He didn't have to take any action on it. V'chashiv alei lamud. And he says, you know what, I'm going to use this in my play. I'm going to use this as my shovel in the sandbox. Or afilu madadba. Or even if he actually did measure it, use it in the sandbox. He didn't do any change to the nut in order to make it into a kli. Over there, his makshava is not meaningful in a halachic sense. And for that reason, it does not have any bearing halachically. So what Rabbi Ami is saying, I don't understand Rabbi Yochanan's question. He has a question about makshava. He doesn't ask about maaser, he asks about makshava. Now, why did he ask about makshava, not maaser? Because he has a Mishnah that tells him what the din is with maaser. That same Mishnah that tells him what the din is with a katan and maaser also tells him what the din is by a katan and makshava. So I'm not sure I understand the question. So Amalei, Machshava Gredita Lokami Ba'ilei. Rabbi Yochanan says back to Rabbi Ami, in a plain situation or scenario of Machshava, I don't have a question. Meaning that he agrees with Rabbi Ami that the Mishnah already answers the question. Masig works by a katan, Machshava does not work by a katan. But Tikami Ba'ilei, my question was, Machshava Toni Keret Mitoch Ma'asav. It's a situation or a scenario where his thoughts are indicated through his action. Kagon, dava kaima ola bidarom. We have a case where the korban ola is in the southern side. Va'atua bitzafom, he takes it over to the northern side, v'shachata, and then he shechs it. So we know that ola is kodshei kodoshim, which required that they be shechted in the northern side. So by his actions, we see that he moved it from the south to the north. He must understand what he is doing. My, mida'ati bitzafom, v'shachat, the fact that he brought it to this north side and shechted it over there, it's clear that he has kavanah kodeshim. He understands what he's doing, and his actions demonstrate a certain amount of depth of understanding. Or maybe he didn't have space over there. It was tight for him on the southern side. The reason he moved it over was a practical reason. It's not because he knew or he understood that he had to move it to the northern side and shechte l'shem kodeshim l'shem ola over there. He moved it because he was too tight on the southern side. He didn't have enough room to do it. He just moved to the north to give himself some elbow room, to give himself some room to do the shechita. And maybe it has nothing to do with the halachic reasons to move it over to the other location. So that's the way the Balei HaTosafot read this Gemara, where the Balei HaTosafot say, over here, near the Farish, Damirato lo mo'elet v'lo meredet elemaseh gamur. That what he says, or what he articulates, makes no difference over here. If he has a full-fledged action, that was the case of the nut, or that he carves out, or he makes into something, that's efficacious, and that we believe has impact. Makshava, on the other hand, if he thinks about something, or he articulates something, it makes no difference, because he didn't take any ma'aseh. And then the question we have is, a makshato nikeret mitoch ma'asav, haynu shu mechiach ketzat. It's a situation in which his masim are not absolutely clear. And the situation with the nut where he carves it out and then uses it to dig up the sand, we know exactly what his intent was because we could see by the evidence of what he did with it. In the case of the Kodoshim, there are two possible interpretations of what his action was. It's one interpretation that it was a proper action. He understood what he was doing, and that's why he moved from the south to the north. Or the other option is that he just moved because he wanted more space. That's a case where his actions seem to belie a positive machshava as understanding what's going on. But on the other hand, there is a possibility that that's not the case. And that's the case where Rabbi Yochanan queried, does the Katan have machshava in that scenario? That's the way Tosafot learns. Tosafot is reacting to the way that Rashi learned it. Rashi learns it in a less simple manner, but Rashi learns it based on what it seems the Mishnayot are indicating over here, which is, Rashi explains that maseh ima dibur chashiv maseh, that an action with articulation is considered to be a maseh, umachshava greida hainu dibur below maseh, is articulation without an action. So Rashi says over here, by the nuts, where he carved them out to make them into a scoop, and he says, I'm carving them out to make them into a scoop, and he does that. He carves them out, makes them into a scoop, and then scoops up with them. So in that case, his action and the dibur together combine to make it that it's efficacious. On the other hand, if he simply articulates, like the case where he finds the shell and he says, I'm going to use this to pick up the sand, or even if he does pick up the sand, because there's no dibur associated with it, that's not enough to make it into a maaseh that has impact over there. And therefore, it doesn't have a shame clear, it doesn't make it into a clear, that can be a mekabel tuma. And then the question is, the case where he has machshava is shown through his actions, meaning that he does an action, and his action also through the action indicates a certain amount of articulation, even though he didn't articulate what he was doing. So in this case, he doesn't articulate the fact that he's moving it to the north in order to sheft it because it's kodshei kodashim. He simply moves it from the south to the north. So you have a maaseh, you have an action. You don't have a dibur, you don't have an articulation, but you have something that seems to indicate his machshava or indicate his intent. Is that enough? So that's the way Rashi reads the Gemara, that the case where we're certain it works is where you have action with articulation. The case where we're certain it doesn't work is where you have articulation without action. The question is, in a case where you have action without articulation, but the lack of articulation is compensated for by some sort of intent that we can see through the action that you took. Your action seems to belie a certain understanding or a certain articulation as to why you're doing it. Is that enough in that scenario? So according to Rashi, if he actually explicitly said he was moving it from the south to the north in order to shecht to the Shem Kodoshim, that would have been sufficient over here. But according to the Balei HaTosafot, even if he articulates that, it makes no difference because articulation of the Katan is not meaningful. Dibur of the Katan is not meaningful according to the Balei HaTosafot. That's the way Rashi learns it, and the Balei HaTosafot don't like this for a number of reasons. He says, V'en Lashon HaShas Mashma Kedvarav, says the simple language of the Mishnayot and the Gemara here don't seem to indicate like Rashi. De'yesh le maseh, mashma maseh greida. He says when it says they have an action, it means when they take action, it is sufficient. And then he proves it from the Gemara that we didn't read yet, but the upcoming Gemara is going to say that there's a scenario where they have maseh and dibur and it doesn't work. There Rashi has to twist and turn to fit it into his shita. According to the Balei HaTosafot, that's just not the scenario that we're speaking about here. Our scenario is a case of maseh without dibur, and dibur is not effective in any way. The articulation is not meaningful. It's the action, and the action alone that makes it efficacious. Dibur by itself is not effective. And then the case where you have a maaseh that seems to indicate that you have an efficacious action, but there isn't a way to explain it, that it wouldn't be efficacious, that's the case where we have a question. All right, we're going to stop here. 6 lines down on the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph.